Triple M 40 is the number one football call on radio.
Footy's on the radio.
And your front row. Welcome to the Sunday Rub.
For McDonald's Gourmet Creations.
Triple M rocks footy.
Balmy Adelaide Oval, the venue for the Adelaide Crows hosting the GWS Giants, and we're hearing potentially a big name omission for the Adelaide Crows. So in the lead up to the opening bounce, Jay-Z will continue to work on that and confirm if there is going to be a late omission for the Adelaide Crows. We have a full preview. Simon Goodwin, the super coach, taken over from Paul Ruse and got a big win against St Kilda yesterday, is going to join us not too far away. Michael Voss from Port Adelaide, off the back of their terrific win yesterday against the Sydney Swans at the SCG. What about the Bombers in front of almost 80,000 people at the MCG last night? Six returning band players. They got the win against the Hawks. Travis Collier will join us. Also have a chat with Nick Maxwell, who has been involved with the GWS Giants. He's now the runner for the football club. And then we'll have a chat to the Adelaide coach, Don Pike. We'll also introduce what caught our eye. And three big things that Jay-Z has picked up so far as I work my way around the Triple M commentary box. And there are awards everywhere. And I'd normally go with the Duck, but Duck's been superseded to vice-captain. 356 games, this man. Five best and fairest, seven All-Australians, a premiership coach in 05. He's got a bronze statue at the SCG, and he's the Zen master. Ruse, Paul Ruse, welcome. Welcome
Thank
to Triple M.
What has been a very interesting morning. The first thing I was trying to work out is who is captain of the team, and we established that earlier, it's Duck.
Yep.
But given the fact that he got the time wrong
at
the cafe,
yeah.
and has lived here in Adelaide,
yep.
I reckon he may be now vice captain.
Yeah, I'm sensing a really good start from Ruse. We like that, Duck. 272 games, four BNF, seven All-Australians. He told us that he had six runner-ups too, but no one cares. Two premierships as captain and two MVPs. Welcome, Duck.
Swat up, boys, listeners. Good to be here. Oh, geez, my voice is just...
Well, you should be embarrassed after your effort before.
Excuse me, that's what happens when you've done eight games on the weekend. looking forward to today, Swatter. Big game, and as you said, maybe a big late change, Jay-Z. They're talking about the captain of, obviously, the Adelaide Crows might be a late withdrawal today.
Taylor Walker.
That is a big out. If he's out, then,
a few reaching for their tipping forms, I reckon, at the
Absolutely.
Moment.
So we will continue to follow that story. 182 games with the Swans. He's off a golf handicap at two, a handy tennis player as well, and does some great things on Triple M Radio here in Adelaide. Dar Lewis, welcome, Louis.
Geez, awards are overrated, aren't they? CVs, who needs those? No, great to be here. And look, I'm very surprised at you, Duck, that being behind, but I wouldn't have thought that was your fault because you would had your mind on the job trying to get things ready for this new outfit this afternoon.
Well, when you're that well prepared, even if you're late, you're still early.
I like it.
And the other member of our call team, Jay Clark, the leading Herald Sun journo. Any awards of note, Jay?
I think I won a coach's award back in the
All right, welcome
12th.
To you, Jay.
No, good to be here, Schwatter. Hey, little birdie tells me that our man here, the Zen Master, Paul Ruse, maybe caught up with Simon Goodwin during the week. A little bit of a coffee chat, a couple of little sort of, pieces of advice. So we got Goody on later.
Yep.
Looking forward to hearing from Ruse and Goody, just what that chat was like.
Well, he did pay for breakfast too, so I appreciate that, Goody.
So looking forward to a big preview with the boys. A big game of football here. We've got the Adelaide Crows taking on the GWS Giants. Just quickly recapping the results. Started Thursday night, Richmond by 43 against the Blues. Bulldogs eventually got over a dogged Collingwood by 14 points. Port Adelaide defeated the Sydney Swans by 28 yesterday at the SCG. We will talk to Michael Voss a little bit later on. Travis Collier from the victorious Essendon outfit down the Hawks by 25 points. And what about this? Brisbane led by as much as 48 points at one stage, managed to starve off the Gold Coast Suns and eke out a two-point win. But I guess the big one, boys, and that is Melbourne defeating the Saints by 30 points. Jay-Z, though, it didn't look particularly good. We'll cover off the Demons with Ruse and Simon Goodwin soon. But it didn't look good for the former captain of the Saints, Nick Riewoldt.
No, it didn't. In fact, when he did go down, it was almost like Bob Murphy all over again, the champion veteran going down with a season-ending knee injury. And you saw Nick Riewoldt, and you could just see the angst all over his face. And I think he asked the doctor straight away, is it my ACL? So, look, at the time, you're thinking this could be season over for Nick Riewoldt. But the very good news is that it's just bone bruising. He's had scans this morning. And he's been totally given the all clear. So we'll speak with Dr. White, I second, in a moment, but I think it might be just the 2 to 4 weeks out for the Saints. But still a big blow for a challenging draw early on in the season.
Well,
let's have a listen to what Nick Riewoldt had to say to Fox Sports this morning in regards to his injury.
Certainly better news than I'm anticipating than what I thought it was going to be when I was laying on the turf last night. So the docs did the test, as I said last night, in the rooms, and they're pretty confident it's not ACL, so we'll just find out what it is. Yeah, I just felt a pop. You know, I was aware I'd landed pretty awkwardly, sort of, I guess, processing that in my mind, particularly given my age. It's potentially career-ending, so some of those thoughts were going through my mind, absolutely. I'm not sure that whether Perth next week's realistic, but, I'm confident it's not the end.
A huge relief, clearly, for the Saints there. We know what a star and what a durable player he has been, despite some knee concerns over recent years. But we have got Doc White on the line now. Doc, a big relief for the Saints. Is it bone bruising, or what's your take on how long he might be out for?
Yeah, well, I should be talking to Dr. Jay Clark here, the way you diagnosed. I'm not sure why you're ringing me, mate. You've got it hit the nail on the head. But look, I think all of us had our heart in our throats when we saw him go down, and mindful of that right knee of Nick's been a real problem for many years. In fact, I remember his first round of surgery was way back in 2002 on that knee. So I think when he went down, he was obviously very apprehensive. And with that hyperextension type injury, you do put the knee under a lot of force. You do put that anterior cruciate under a lot of force. But look, great news in that the cruciate's intact. But what does happen is that the femur bone of the upper thigh and the tibia bone of the leg, they do jam against each other, and that's what causes the bone bruising. And in fact, when you do damage your knee, it's the bone bruising that really hurts. So no wonder Nick went down, grabbed his knee and feared the worst. But look, it's a relatively good prognosis, Jay.
So how long do you think, Doc? What's your gut feel? How long could he be out for?
Yeah, well, it could well be 3 to 4 weeks. Bone bruising is a bit like micro fractures in the bone. You do get a lot of swelling, and of course, given Nick's previous issues with that knee, with the cartilage and so on, the club will treat him very conservatively. They will not get him back until that swelling's down, and he's got a full range of movement and can wait there fully and participate in full training. So it's probably going to be up to a month. But mindful, can I take you back a few years? Buddy Franklin, I don't know if you remember this, but in the final series, I think it was about 2012, he buckled his knee. We all thought the worst. It came out as bone bruising. Now, maybe it was finals and maybe it was Buddy, but guess what? He played the following week. So, you know, there's a range of prognoses. But I think with Nick, given his problems with this knee, they'll give him every chance to be 110%.
Appreciate you joining us, Doc.
Anytime, Trotter.
There you go, Dr. Rowan White, big part of Triple M footy. Let's just start with, that's a good result for the Saints.
Great
I think
result.
Great result for Nick Riewoldt, because it didn't look that way yesterday on the TV.
Yeah, one of those moments at the football, wasn't it? Every fan, Melbourne and St Kilda, everyone in the corporate suites, media, wherever it was, just was a hush. And even the last 5 minutes of the game was quite strange, wasn't it? Because you could see the game was sort of over, but you could sort of tell everyone was thinking about Nick Riewoldt rather than the result at that stage.
Do we know whether that was the same knee that he has drained or had drained over the last couple of years every week?
I believe so. Yeah, Doc said then that he's had issues with it going back to, I think, 2002, he said.
Well, good result for Nick Riewoldt. Not a good result for the Saints. While we stay on that game, Roosie, the former coach of the Melbourne Footy Club, a venue that you haven't had much joy at for a number of years. In fact, I think it's the second win at Etihad against St Kilda since 2006. A great performance yesterday under Simon Goodwin.
Yeah, it was. It was fantastic to watch. The first quarter, I thought St Kilda put amazing pressure on, and Melbourne struggled with their ball use early. And then, surprisingly a little bit, the St Kilda pressure around the contest dropped off. But I thought what Simon did, and we'll ask him about this later on as he comes on, I thought what they did is made the ground really big. They actually were able to make the St Kilda have to defend the width and length of the ground. And I thought their ball use was, and we used, I used to call it sort of that half-pace, three-quarter-pace game. They didn't play a manic game. And sometimes you can get caught up in a real foot race at Etihad. And that's probably the problem Melbourne have had, getting into a real foot race. I thought they controlled the ball movement and made it really, really difficult. They lowered their eyes, ducked going inside the forward 50, and that took away Robertson. Robertson had 9 disposals in the first quarter and really wasn't a factor after that. I think they were the two really big things that happened in the game.
In the first quarter, and even under your coaching in the last few years, at times they're prone to overhandball. They did handball, and I thought they did that a lot in the first quarter. They did a lot actually during the whole game at times. They could have probably won by more if they'd tidied that up. They're giving a handball to a player under more pressure than what they were. But You're right. They adjusted really quickly after quarter time. I thought they were in real trouble because St Kilda were clearly on top. And I guess in the past, I'm talking before your time, they would falter there.
Yep.
They wouldn't have been able to adjust and come back. So that shows a maturity in itself. It was a very, very good win.
Jesse Hogan was pretty handy, Rizzy. Yeah, I think Lee Matthews might have given him best on ground with his 3 goals and 21 disposals up forward. He looks like he's got a real appetite for it. Slimmed down a touch as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's always sort of questions and answers in different games, isn't there? I think that the fact that Jesse played so well on the back of a really good preseason, he came back really, really fit and healthy. Talked about, I think last week, he talked about, you know, the worry last year, was he going to go back and all those. And he puts a lot of pressure on himself, the kid. I think the other story to come out of that, and we spoke about a little bit, is Carlisle and Brown are very straight line defenders. And Jesse Hogan is probably the best side to side, over the back, keeps moving. I mean, hasn't got elite agility, Jesse, but he reads the play so well. That was always going to be an interesting story going into the game. How would Carlisle and Brown deal with it? And I think they really, really struggled with it.
And you own that uncontested footy as well. It was plus 120 or something in their favour.
You know what he did really well yesterday, and you often see it? He had a couple of times, Swatter, where he could have gone for an absolute screamer. He didn't. You know what? He just said, no, all that I have to do is here, just put the knee in gently, judge the footy, take the mark. And he did that beautifully. He read the flight of the ball really well yesterday.
I think he's 10 kilos lighter than what he was when he rocked up at the start of last preseason. Bruzy, did he rock up just totally out of shape? Or?
Oh, look, I think they're all young kids when they come in, obviously. He's a Western Australian boy. He goes back home and you can tend to lose your way a little bit. I mean, it takes a lot of discipline to play AFL football. When I saw him on the ground before the game, he did look in really good shape, really lean, and he played like that. I tell you the other guys that were really impressed me, which was probably something 3 years ago, that Melbourne really struggled with, which is that older leadership. I thought Bernie Vince was exceptional, Nathan Jones and Jordan Lewis. I thought those three guys, experienced players, game was getting away a little bit, Duck, I reckon, and then they were the three players I really felt that controlled the game. And all three are really good kicks, Duck. So I think if a ball's getting in Bernie's hand, Lewis or Nathan, they generally like to kick it more than they do handball. And I think they were able to get them into the kicking game really well.
Does Nate Jones get the credit he deserves? He's been a gun. I don't know how many BNFs he's won, but he has held that club up for so long and continues. I agree. I thought he was superb yesterday.
Oh, look, his evolution as captain's been fantastic. I think what happens when you play, and I spoke to Nate Jones about this a lot. Yeah, I went through it a little bit at Fitzroy. When you're playing in a poor team, you really go insular. You think about yourself. You don't worry too much about, you know, how many possessions I'm going to get, because there's a lot of pressure on the better players at the poor clubs. What I've seen Nathan over the 3 years that I coached, his evolution from a player that generally carried the team around stoppages and was getting 30 possessions a game, he's now team first, and he still continues to play a very valuable role. And I thought, you know, who was best on ground? Was it Jesse Ho? I thought he was near close because he was just so dominant, so consistent. And what tends to happen, as you guys know, when you're playing better teams, Louis, you tend to get more credit. So he'll start to get some recognition now as Melbourne become a better football team.
I just reckon he's in for a little bit of a honeymoon period. We've got Oliver, and how good can that kid be? Oh. Petrarca coming along. Lewis has come to help out. And a few of the other boys coming along for the ride. He might just slip off the radar from top two or three. He might just get, hey, I'm actually going to run around by myself for an afternoon more often than not.
Well, they're playing halfback too. So you've got Bernie Vince, Lewis and Jones that can go to halfback. And as a midfield that goes to halfback, suddenly you're not worried about an opponent. You've got to pick someone up. But those high half forwards can get a bit lost up the ground. The smart halfbacks can rack up 5 or 6 positions in 5 or 10 minutes. And Nathan smart, Bernie smart, Jordan Lewis is really smart. So that adds a real dimension to that team.
Nicely done too by the Demons against the Saints at a venue that they've really struggled with over the last 11 years. They defeated St Kilda by 30 points. And the victorious coach joins us on the line, Simon Goodwin. Welcome, Goody. Congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, Swatter. Good to join you. It was a good day for the footy club, and it's obviously round one, but it was a good way to start.
Goody, Roosie, well done, mate. Terrific effort. Just probably a couple of tactical things first. I felt after quarter time, the way you stretched their defence was really pivotal. Wasn't a sort of fast-paced game, as perhaps you can get caught up in Eddie at times, but I thought your ball movement was a lot more considered, lowering your eyes inside forward 50, and it really changed the look of St Kilda's defence, and Roberton really struggled after that. Was that something you discussed at quarter time, or did the players sort of just adjust to that themselves?
No, you're right, Rizzi. We were certainly, you know, conscious of St Kilda's pressure. I thought their pressure in the first quarter was outstanding, and we had to get back to winning our fair share of ball, but once we settled into the game and got our fair share of ball, we actually did pull the ground apart really well, and thought we controlled the tempo of the game with our ball use and certainly made St Kilda defend for long periods of time.
I thought the senior players too were just outstanding. Bernie Vince, Nathan Jones and Lewis. I know you had some terrific young players as well, but probably start with them. I thought just their ability to sort of settle the game down a little bit. Obviously, Maxie Gorn had a big impact in the ruck. But tell us a bit about Bernie, Nathan and Jordan's first game for the club.
Yeah, I think that's what, you know, Jordan brings to the club. He brings composure under pressure. And now we've spoken at length at leadership group and about, you know, the ability to handle those situations. And we spent a lot of time on it over the summer, is that we are going to be uncomfortable at periods in games, and just our ability to stay composed, work out what the solutions are, get ourselves back in the game. And I thought our leaders were just terrific in that second quarter. They were intense around the ball, and they set us up with our ball use.
Well done, Goody. First win up. Congratulations.
Thanks,
buddy. Did you think at any time, I know in the first quarter I certainly thought watching the game that you were overusing the handball. Was that something that you discussed at quarter time, or in actual fact, even when you were dominating the game at times, I thought you gave handballs that you didn't need to give?
Yeah, we probably more discussed a little bit in the third quarter, Duck. You know, I think in some ways we just had to take what the defence gave us, and you know, St Kilda were folding back in that third quarter, and we probably, you know, were a little bit overused the ball at times in that third quarter, but I thought we were pretty patient as well at times and really lowered our eyes inside 50. So wasn't something that we spoke about a lot on the day. I think the players adjusted severely to what the defence gave us.
You're the number one play on side last year. I don't know whether you knew that, Roosy, but you dominated. you dominated.
I'm learning a lot up here, Goody.
you dominated that again yesterday, St Kilda. Clearly, that's the way you want to play. You want to play, and Roosy is exactly right though. It was patient footy. You didn't play too fast, but it certainly you like to play on and get the ball in quickly.
Yeah, look, we certainly like to keep the ball in motion. There's no doubt about that. I think it's the way the modern game is played. But, you know, I thought once we got control around those stoppages and contested areas, and we turned that into our offence, and that was really the ability that changed the game. That was the ability to start to impact the ball around stoppages. And I thought Max Gorn really took over after quarter time.
He was outstanding. Goody, Jay Clark here. I saw you on the training track about 10 days ago, mate. You're normally very energetic, upbeat, bubbly on the training track. You look worried, mate. You were sort of head on your hands. You were crouching down, sort of a much more worried figure. And clearly Jack Watts was a big selection decision weighing on your mind. How did you think he responded yesterday?
You're a smart man, Jay. I was a bit worried about 10 days out. And it was probably more due to the fact that we probably had 6 or 7 guys that were we injured in the first couple of JLTs, and there was a fair bit of planning going into our preparation and, you know, in the team that we wanted to pick and getting a fit team that was ready to play. And so there were a few things that were certainly consuming us as coaches, but Jack Watts was, for what he did yesterday, I just loved the way that he launched the ball. I thought that was something we've been working really hard on with Jack, his ability to launch the ball and give us a contest and bring some of our coming players into play. And he did that really well yesterday, so I was happy for him.
Goody, first real day in the office, playing for 4 points. How did you find it?
Yeah, look, I got a bit tense than what I normally would, Rudy. it was more just a couple of structural things, but, you know, I enjoyed it. I think, as you know, Rudy, we've got a great group of coaches that we work with, and with Jade Rawlings doing defence and Benny and Chappie, and I think what they've put in place over the summer, and we had great confidence in throughout the day. So we just tinkered with a few things at quarter time and got back to playing the way that we wanted to play.
Goody, did the Zen Master leave you a little envelope, break in case of emergency, five commandments, you know, that type of thing?
No, he taught me a fair bit in his 2 years though, and certainly that calmness on game really important, and it came out yesterday.
But you did catch up, didn't you, Goody and Roos? Did you have a little coffee on Thursday Goody, or something
Goody
like that?
Yeah, Goody played for my breakfast. Well, I think the Melbourne Footy Club did. I don't know whether it comes under soft cap or not.
Whether it was smashed eggs or
not
a smashed
sure.
egg.
We had to, I can't
yeah, well, I had to catch up with Roos. You needed to catch up on everything. Woody's been in Hawaii for 4 months.
So what did he tell you, Goody? What were his last piece of advice or golden wisdom before your first game?
We just spoke everything generally about footy, didn't we, Roos? It was more about Melbourne, how we were tracking. Where we thought we'd advance in our game style, and it was more of a friendly catch up than anything.
Well, that sort of goes against what Roosie told us at coffee. He said, "Goody, I've left this joint in good shape. Don't stuff up."
I tell you what, he did. He had a good crack at the snakes when he sat down too. I noticed that and that's the only thing I missed about coaching Duck. The snakes. I didn't get the snakes in the box. I want to talk to you about the stoppages, Goody, because I reckon they were significant. And as you said, as we know that. Yeah, the coaching staff is made up of a lot of terrific people, and I thought you made some really good adjustments around. You really started to move. Clayton Oliver moving through the stoppages. I thought that was it the wing or half back was really useful coming off using the hands, but also I thought centre bounces. You started to dominate the centre bounces, and rather than sort of bombing it in long from centre bounce, you tended to go sideways and then short. So, just comment on that. I thought the stoppages was really, really productive after quarter time.
Yeah, Benny Matthews does a great job. We tinkered with a few ideas. Something we've been trying to do is continue to be really adventurous as a coaching group. I thought we changed a few things in centre bounce. And once Maxi got on top with his hit-outs in the second quarter, the connection that we've been working with our midfielders was terrific, and their movement around the ball was quite dynamic. So, it was full credit to the boys in there.
And there's always good stories coming out of round one, Goody, about debutants. And I met young Mitch Hannon before the game. He had a big smile on his face, and he's a good-sized lad. And you could tell he was very, very excited about playing his first game. And I think for those of that hadn't seen him much, he certainly showed why you picked him. I thought he had a very, very productive first game.
Yeah, he did. He's really stood out in training. He had a shoulder reconstruction coming at the club, so he missed a lot of the pre-Christmas and really only got into full contact heading into February. So we've only seen him on the track for probably 5 or 6 weeks, and he's really stood out. And his game at Casey last week was just brilliant. So he sort of picked himself in a lot of ways, but he brings a power and athleticism. And what you love about him is under pressure he continues to play, and he plays the same way. And he did that on debut yesterday.
And Goody, a bit of bad luck for the first game of young Smith. Dislocated shoulder. Can you tell us, will he have the operation, or will he just sort of strap it up for 4 weeks and try to have a go at that?
Yeah, we're not sure. It's disappointing for Joel. He's had a good summer, and he's an incredible talent. So we'll get him assessed during the week, and then we'll have a scan. But, yeah, he's probably going to be out for a little while, that's for sure. But, we've got to make sure we get it right, most importantly.
Well, you got it right yesterday, Goody. A 30-point win against the Saints. You take on the Blues next Sunday at the Triple MCG. We'll be calling it. Well done. Congratulations. Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
There you go. Simon Goodwin defeating the Saints yesterday by 30 points. Just quickly, let's head around the grounds, please, Jay-Z, with an injury update off the back of the scores, West Coast Kangaroos.
Yeah, Eagles up by 7 points at Etihad Stadium, Schwatter, but Nathan Vardy has just gone to the bench with a back injury. He has had trouble with his back before, so Vardy and Petrie, we believe, are both on the bench at the moment. Petrie struggling with a thumb or wrist, so we'll keep you updated with that. Two of West Coast remaining ruckmen, really only Jonathan Giles left on the bench at the moment with injuries.
All right, we were at the MCG last night, Jay-Z, in front of almost 80,000 people. Six banned players came back for the Bombers. Jared Roughhead came back. Joe Watson was back. So many subplots. Two new captains for the respective teams. And in front of a big crowd, the Bombers defeated Hawthorn by 25 points.
And what a storyline, Schwatter. I mean, the atmosphere was absolutely electric at the MCG last night. They made a flying start. The Bombers, two quick goals. Essendon fans off their feet. But even more impressive than that, I thought, was the way they were able to stand up in the last quarter when Hawthorn were coming, made that charge in the third term. Now, clearly there was a big question mark over the Bombers and physically how these guys would stand up after a year out of the game. But when it came down to the crunch in that last quarter, I thought that the composure and the effort to run, the courage to run, when they're out off their feet, Zaharakis was hobbling to the bench, could hardly walk, and because they had really no fit men left on the bench, he had to go back out there and play, and some of the young guys were the same. Mark Bagley said, when the final siren went to see the joy, the exhilaration on the Essendon players' faces was just fantastic. And look, they're a much improved side, Essendon, and the way they played, Ruse, you're probably better to talk about this than me. They went down the middle, they went with cleanness, they went quickly, and Tippin Woody, Green, and Fantasia in the forward line, Schwatter. I tell you what, it's going to kick some goals this year.
Yeah, I think both teams, and we'll talk Essendon first and we'll talk Hawthorn like that, because both teams have had some changes, particularly Essendon. And I think the first thing when you looked at Essendon last night is what do they look like structurally? I felt their team looked really good. You got Hurley down back, you got now Hooker and Dan Herb. You talked about the three small. So you're looking at the premiership teams and the teams at the top of the ladder. How did they look structurally like that? All of a sudden, your midfield, that's Zach Merritt. I'll tell you what, he is an absolute, if you went back on that draft again, you'd take him number one. There's some really good players come out of that draft. So you look at their team firstly from a structural point of view, some real depth through the midfield, Heppel inside, outside, Watson inside. So I felt they look really good structurally. And then on the back of that, you start to shape your game plan. I thought they were able to run it out of defence. They were able to get it over the top at times, the one-on-ones. Hooker's mark in the last quarter on Frawley was a significant mark. So, Duck, I thought structurally they look really good, and then their game plan looks very similar to what the top teams are doing.
One thing the Bombers have never had, or according to Bombers fans, have never had those small forwards. And then you've got Fantasia, McDonald, Tip and Woody and these guys. How important do you reckon in the modern game, Louis, are these, that they, to me, if you haven't got small forwards, firstly to lock the ball in, so the pressure that they put on, that's number one.
Yep.
Then if you get goals from them, well, that's an absolute bonus. And if you think of Hawthorn, obviously, you know, Rioli and Bruce and Poppy and those guys, absolutely brilliant at it. And I reckon Port Adelaide, when they had Monfries, they had Gray playing up there, and who was the other? Wingard.
Yep.
All small forwards playing it. That's when they played in a preliminary final, just got beaten by the Hawks. They've just become almost a key to your whole game plan, those small forwards, because they lock it in, Louis.
Yeah, Razio Fantasia, not only that, great pressure, but he knows how to kick a goal as well. But yeah, for whatever reason, you'll see it today with Betts, and if Cameron spends a bit of time up there, that just that real heat, first of all. So when the ball hits the ground, there's no time to get your head up and have a look and see what's going on. And the best part about all of these guys now is they've got a real knack to kick a goal. And you're right with Port Adelaide. Robbie Gray spent a lot more time up forward yesterday. Chetty Wingard has had the hand up, wanting to be a midfielder, spent more time forward. No surprises, they kick some goals and cause some real damage.
We are hearing a suggestion, Jay-Z, there may be a late omission for the Adelaide Crows.
Well, our man Duck here got the hot tip not so long ago. He walks through Adelaide, he just gets information. People just, you know, they converge to him, and he's got the mail that...
It's a shame he couldn't get the time.
That Taylor Walker might miss with a niggling hamstring concern. I believe they're giving him till the very last minute. So our man Duck with the hot...
Can I ask a question? Why do Adelaide, Louis? Why are they half an hour behind? What's going on?
It gets brought up every second year it comes up.
Why? Why?
They are looking at changing it because it puts all the businesses in the same frame of mind and
time zone,
so you don't get caught out on the half-hour difference.
It's got something to do with geography, though, hasn't it, Doug?
Hang on.
Curtains get
Hang on. You're kidding me, aren't you?
I think it would be...
I understand Perth.
Yeah, it's an easy fix.
It's an easy fix. It's half an hour.
Louis will fix it.
It's half an hour. Make it an hour or get rid of it.
I'm totally with you, mate.
I'm liking what Ruzzi's bringing to the Sunday call team here.
Accountability.
It's because he's made of blue. He wants to change the whole time.
That's exactly right. Near map, aerial imagery. The hardest thing to say is I got it wrong, Doug. Hey, let's head around the grounds, please, Jay-Z.
Yeah, it's North Melbourne. Pinch the lead back. They're up by 3 points over the Eagles. With Jared Waite has a shot on goal with a minute and a half to go. So North Melbourne looking to extend their three-point lead. Schwatter.
Got a full book before the opening bounce. Michael Voss, Travis Collier, Nick Maxwell and Don Pike. But time for a new seg. It's What Caught Your Eye.
The Sunday Rubs. What's Caught Your Eye?
Tell you what has caught my ear, Schwatter. It was something the Zen master Paul Ruse just said then. I've got some a golden tidbit in a second here. But, Ruse, did you say you would take Zach Merritt, number one, in that 2013 draft? So there's Marcus Bontempelli, and there's Tommy Boyd, there's Josh Kelly, there's Patrick Cripps in that draft, Jack Billings as well. Where does he fit in the top couple, Zach Merritt, now? One or two?
Look, he's right up there. I mean, it's always, in hindsight, it's a lot easier to pick him than when you pick him at the time. But I suppose it comes a bit of a surprise when you see a kid, when you see a kid that's picked five, Duck, and he becomes the best player of that draft or thereabouts, you sort of say, well, that's just pot luck. So, but when you're 26, I think you said, Jay, when you be 26 and you jump up, he's best and fairest winner last year.
And outstanding last
night. Had 35 last night. Mm. And what differentiates him a lot, the kids that I see now, is his decision-making and skill execution is elite. Mm-hmm. So, look, where does he sit now? He has to be in the top bracket of that draft, unquestionably. Bonampelli's size gives him an opportunity to go forward and take a mark. If you wanted a pure midfielder, he'd have to be in the conversation.
Yeah. Because above Kelly?
I think so. Again, look, and I don't get to see them play a lot, and it's unfair on Kelly or Bonampelli or whoever. So I would blanket four or five of them in that. Look, I'm a big Christian Salem fan as well. He hasn't had a run at it. I thought his second half last night. I suppose what I'm saying, rather than go one, two, three, four, five, he's got to be in the top bracket now of that draft, along with Kelly and Bonampelli and those sort of guys.
Absolute bargain pick. I tell you what, before I leave you, Schwatter, also now, Brisbane key forward, number two draft pick, Josh Shackey, not yet re-signed at Brisbane. So he's the big, the next big thing of their forward line. An absolute star talent. They can't re-sign him. Richmond, people. Richmond is the club which is circling this gun forward. Of course, they got Griffiths and Riewoldt. They're looking for the next spearhead, and it's the Tigers who are circling Josh Shackey.
What normally happens is we work around the room. We have one each, but no BT, so Jay-Z's trying to own it. I hope you've just learned two valuable lessons there, Roosie. What you say during the break does not always remain in the break. Wow. And second thing, get the Herald Sun tomorrow. Back page lead. Zach Merritt, number one draft pick, according to Paul Roos.
Hi, Paul Roos.
guaranteed, Roosie.
He has been known to grab a headline from Roosie.
What do you got?
I'll tell you what, I was walking down Clarendon Street the other day and saw this absolutely gorgeous Mercedes-Benz. Why did you start? No, anyway, I don't know, Jake. No, you know what caught my eye? Erin Phillips. She is an absolute gun. What, she had 27 posies? 28 posies. She's absolutely brilliant. I don't know, she's an Olympic athlete and all of that, but played footy when she was a kid and hasn't played for so long. But she has just dominated this competition. And seriously, you can't take your eyes off her. She is a sensational footballer.
Well done to the Adelaide Crows.
Well done to the Adelaide Crows, my old team, winning the flag.
Yeah, very good. Louis.
What's caught my eye? It's already been out on social media, but these logos in the goal square. Mm. And the AFL...
Toyota?
And the AFL comeback, the suggestion, I think, might have been Patrick Keane. Apologies, Patrick, if it wasn't you. You'll get used to it. You won't even notice it. I would have thought if I'm a sponsor paying big bucks, I want people to notice that sort of stuff in the goal square. So you would hope that we don't stop recognising Toyota in the goal square.
All right, we're going to go to Howie very shortly at the Grand Prix. But my observation, Roosie, is when you've worked with the King for a number of years in the Triple M commentary box, you know when he's in good nick because there's this crisp, creaseless white shirt.
Yep.
Oh. And an observation today is rolled with the checkered one, and we've only got two buttons undone. Now, when he's in mint condition and he's pimped himself within an inch of his life, that'll generally happen 2 weeks before a trip to Bali starts to come onto the agenda. He's trained off a little. I'm suspecting Duck's probably, just looking at him, probably put on about 3 kgs would be my estimation, Duck. Would I be on the money?
I'm going to get on to Roosie's man shake.
Yeah, and that's just not, let it that's go not, a bit in the summer
That's
months.
Not sash for comment either, I'm allowed to say that.
We did speak about it in the car.
And you know what? I've got a couple to lose and I'm going to get onto the man. Now,
can we get back to your skanky feet spot? Honestly, this is just completely unprofessional. You do a lot of bike riding.
I do.
Assume the wheels and the boots that you got on aren't really foot-friendly. No. They are just out and out skanky. Mate, can you put them away, please? That's a hygiene issue.
Because I've got a bad case of tinea. I need to air it out. Let's go to the Grand Prix because Mark Howard is covering it all there for the F1.
It's his segment.
Roosie, sorry.
Do you want me one?
I do, as a matter of fact. I thought you might have said something.
I'm going to go on the duck thing. What caught my eye, it wasn't actually this week, but I think it's worth bringing it
absolutely.
Up. Tammy and I had finished doing a talk. Finished doing a talk, and I've walked out, and Tammy asked me a question. Look, who are the best players you'd played against and on and all this
Matthews
stuff?
Matthews would be up there, wouldn't he?
Well, Matthews was one, Duck was two, and I just finished talking about Wayne Carey. What a great, he used to run the... Yeah. Pretty much run the state and all this. No sooner had I looked up and I ran into the big fella carrying a washing basket. He was carrying his washing basket down St Kilda Road. I'm telling you, he carried. And I said, Tammy, I apologise.
What did she say?
Well, she said, and Duck was very nice to Tammy. We've been to tell before. As we walked, that's not Seriously.
That is a little bit embarrassing. You're on the main road, Spotter. Yes. Sort of real tacky looking.
What are you doing?
Well, where I live.
The butler had a day off.
I was going to say.
Where I live, there's an actual laundromat next door, and they do all your washing and ironing for you very, very cheap. And I figured, why do it when you can just drop it off there? But the embarrassing part of it is you've sort of got to walk up St Kilda Road with your washing basket. and who else would you want to run into than Roosie?
I would have thought he might have had a friend to take care of that.
A man not far.
I can guarantee you I have ever since.
Yeah, a man that's not far from St Kilda Road. In fact, he's down at Albert Park and he's going to be a big part of the Sunday call team here on Triple M. Been busy so far with some footy. Now he's got the F1 Grand Prix. Howie, welcome to you.
Hello, Swatter. Sounds like to me Duck's been kicked out of home again.
Oh, thanks, Howie. Jeez, yeah,
come on,
this
with
is
a bang.
Real.
He's come on with a bang, Howie.
He's great, great when he's not here.
Jeez, I love how you get looked after by the Triple M team, Roosie.
Yep. Now, what's happening down there, Howie? Who's got pole? What time do we have start position? And who do you think will win?
Well, Lewis Hamilton has pole for the fourth straight year alongside Sebastian Vettel. The race will all be about the start. If Vettel, which everyone predicts to get off the start line quicker, it'll be a great battle between the Ferrari and Mercedes. Race starts at 5 o'clock. Big story here, though. Daniel Ricciardo, who threw it down the road yesterday and had an accident, he was going to start 10th in qualifying, but he damaged his gearbox, so he gets put back 5 positions. So now Ricciardo starts from 15th. So it'll be a tough race for Danny Boy.
Any other? Who are the other threats in the race apart from the man that we'd love to see win it, Dan Ricciardo? But based on what you've just said, it's going to be pretty hard.
Yeah, Hamilton and Vettel, they're your top two. The only thing that can happen is the first race of the year, there's reliability issues. So a little bit of that type of stuff can go on. But you'd imagine, for mine, Lewis Hamilton's the man to beat. Lots of sort of superstars around here at the Grand Prix. I know Duck's been here before, but I had a nasty incident yesterday when I was meant to interview Nicole Kidman. And asked her if I could ask her a question, and she said, yes, yes, no problem, and I needed you, Ducky, and maybe even you, Roosie, because then her security boy came in like Luke Hodge from about 150 metres and put me over the back fence, so we didn't really get much of an interview there. But apart from that, it's been going okay.
All right, Howie, we appreciate you joining us, and I think you're joining us again next Sunday, first time.
Yep, I'll be back.
Yes, I will be. I look forward to it, boys. Have a great call.
We're just hearing news that the potential omission is...
Taylor Walker, he's out, the captain of the Adelaide Football Club. Absolutely huge out for the Crows. And our man, Wayne Carey, he comes to Adelaide and people just feed him with the information. You're all over this one.
But I'm with Roosie. Louis, just had to get the time right and we were here late.
Louis knew it last night. But anyway, thanks.
yeah, look, thanks, it's a little frequency once you're in the inner circle of trust. It's hard to get out. So, you know, Duck, you know these things.
So we'll cover that off with Don Pike and that may change the way that this game plays out. Because the Giants, well, they went deep last year and they'll be keen to get off to a good start. Getting off to a good start, though,
will be Riley Knight. He's the man coming in for Taylor Walker.
All right, very good. So the Port Adelaide Footy Club, under pressure, Kenny Hinkley's coaching tenure is in the spotlight, but couldn't have got off to a better win or performance and start yesterday, Duck. They went to the SCG and got the Sydney Swans by 28 points, and they out-Sydneyed Sydney, and you don't often say that. Michael Voss joins us. Vossy, well done.
Thanks, guys. Good win.
It was a great win, and then reading through the numbers today in the paper, it was the contested football and the clearances that were really underpinned the performance yesterday.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was always going to be challenging in terms of just the opposition, but also potentially the conditions. In the lead-up to the game, there was always a chance it was going to rain, so we sort of figured that the ball would spend a fair bit of time on the deck, and then when you put together Sydney's ability to be able to win that part of the ground more often than not, it was a big area for us, and sort of get the ascendancy around the clinches was pretty good thing for us.
Mate, what's the best thing about, obviously, teams, I mean, Melbourne having coached them last year, but teams like yourselves and us being Melbourne, there's things you have to work on in order to get up the ladder, isn't there, during that pre-season period? I guess, what was the most pleasing thing from a coaching group that you're able to action that you've really worked hard on over that pre-season?
Oh, well, I think that was the main part of the game for us. There's the numbers at the contest, but then there's the shape off the ball you need to have too, that does protect you, we've worked very hard at that. In some ways we had to go that way last year without a recognised ruckman, just in terms of around the midfield, and that really sort of gave us a really great a base to work from, and we've taken that through our pre-season, and You know, our defenders have set up really well behind the ball, and you know, that gives you a real chance not just to be able to, you know, crack in at the cold face, but, you know, have the shape around it also at the same time.
Vossie, how important in the modern game, we've been talking about it already this morning or this afternoon, the small forwards. How much more time will Gray and Wingard and those guys spend forward? Will they spend more time forward this year than in previous years? I know Gray did a couple of years ago and Wingard generally does, but will they spend more time there? We saw Dusty Martin and obviously others already in this round one.
Yeah, and we've played, Chad, also a little bit through the midfield. You know, we've given him some exposure there, and because we do want to have the depth through the midfield, but at the same time we recognise that having players that can go forward and, you know, having that extra rotation on the field is important for us. And when you've got two guys like, you know, Chad and also Robbie, I mean, they're pretty much in their own right. They could kick 40 goals themselves as forwards, let alone going on the ball. So we want to use that weapon if we can. It always helps when you can build your depth in the list too. You know, having Carl Amon coming into the team, and obviously young Sam Pelpepo, you know, holding up his spot in the midfield too, gives you a little bit of a luxury to play those guys in different positions.
Who does he remind you of, Vossie? Sorry, Sam Pelpepo. I mean, just an absolute brute at the contested ball. Does he remind you of anyone?
I just think he's got enormous power. You know, he's you know, having Ollie and him in there, they're like sort of crash brothers, really. They just get stuck into the contest. They don't shirk anything. And to have a, I guess, a 19-year-old come in and just throw his weight around like he does, you know, it's pretty rare. And also is, you know, the attribute of having a bit of power. And so, you know, he uses it really well. He always sort of forces himself on every contest he possibly can, and he never gives up. And, you know, it's some good qualities to have.
Mate, one of the big stories in the off-season was the no third man up rule. And we're already seeing in round one, early days, it's having a significant impact. The ruckmen are really dominating. The dominant ruckmen are dominating, I guess, because you can't put in a plan B. It must be exciting for you guys to have Ryder, you know, who's been played a little bit forward throughout his career, but certainly over the course of his career, he's a much better ruckman than he is forward. So that's got to be exciting for you guys to have him this year.
Yeah, it is. Even just you see some of his centre square bounce work, and you know, he gets great clearance. You know, I think some of the challenge also is you don't get too excited as a midfield group, and you know, you had Max Gorn and Melbourne Roosie, and you know, be able to get the hand on it, but you've got to complement that with the ground level also. And you know, and they're building that still relationship, and but having someone like Paddy in there that you can get first use of the footy, or, you know, mids can go to work and they can go to work with some real confidence that the ball's going to be put to their favour.
Yeah, I think you're right. Sorry, Luke. I think you're right, because what will tend to happen, Vossie, as you alluded to, is, well, I think other midfields are going to adjust to the dominant ruckman. And we saw the era of that prior to the third up. So I think what you're going to find now is that, is it Melbourne mids or whether it's Freo mids or yourselves with Ryder, they're going to get really locked onto it. I think that's going to be the next level. And you're right, you don't want your guys leaving early, do you?
No, you don't. The timing's really right. I mean, you know, I guess there's probably, it's a really hard one to read because, you know, Rucks is, you know, such a 50-50 ball. And so any sort of slight advantage you can get in that regard where you just, and all you're looking for as a midfielder is just to get a little bit of split. You just want that ball a little bit in your favour so you can give yourself a first chance to get at the footy. So, you know, having a recognised ruckman and someone who wins more often, you know, their fair share of the footy does make a bit of a difference for you.
Vossie, plenty of good stories. You know, you spoke about Pelpepo. I thought Dan Houston looked not out of place at all down there, very calm. But two blokes, Tom Jonas and Jared Pollock, both instrumental when you've been up and about, and Tommy lost his way a little bit, and Jared has had that foot injury and not been able to get back, but the wheels were certainly in motion yesterday, and you looked such a better side with him sort of getting up and down the park.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you have a balance. You've got to have a balance in your side, and when you have, you know, one person out that's actually really important to your football team, you know, there's a domino effect to other positions. And, you know, someone like Jonas, who brings such great leadership, and we missed him with that suspension and then, you know, a lot of injury last year. So we didn't have that continuity, but we also lacked that, you know, real strong leader down there too. And as you highlighted with, you know, with Polly, you know, when sometimes you don't know what you're missing, but he's, you know, he's got a, you know, he's break lines, you know, he orientates himself well through traffic. I don't think he gets enough pats on the back for just how clean he is inside. And, you know, he breaks lines for you, and they're just really important players for you, and they just complement the inside work that you have, and then, you know, can be really clean on the outside at the same time.
First step in a long season was a good one. You defeated the Sydney Swans. You take on Fremantle back at the Adelaide Oval next weekend. Vossy, well done. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.
There you go. Michael Voss, the midfield coach for the Port Adelaide Footy Club. 28-point win against the Sydney Swans. Let's head around the grounds, Jay-Z.
It's West Coast, still by 4 points and midway through the second quarter.
Injury two.
Schwatter. Ovadi and Petrie both got concerns but have come back on the ground, mate. But Sam Mitchell, I'll tell you what, he's halfway towards the 3 Brownlow medal votes already because he's got 17 possessions, 70% efficiency. So Sam Mitchell in his first game for West Coast, absolutely braining him.
And his old team could have done with him along with Jordan Lewis and Luke Hodge last night. Still want to cover off the Hawks and get the boys' thoughts. A big out for the Adelaide Crows, though.
Yeah, Taylor Walker, the captain, as Wayne Carey said off the top of the show, out with the hamstring soreness, just did not get up. They're going to give him to the last minute, and Riley Knight comes into the side. So given they're already missing a couple of players at Adelaide today, I think that just tips the balance towards GWS.
Well, we've already covered off the Bombers ourselves in front of almost 80,000 people last night. Got the job done beautifully against the Hawks. 25-point win. You talk about the six banned players or 6 of 12 that came back. Another man that has become a very important player for the Bombers is Travis Collier, and he was at his electrifying best last night. And I would imagine, boys, that he enjoyed that victory like none other than what he did last night with his teammates. And he joins us right now. Trav, thanks for joining us. Congratulations. And just what were you feeling after the final siren, a 25-point win, given what the club and the players have gone through?
I think probably for the build-up and everything about sort of hit home then of the amount of support, I guess, that we've got and I guess where we've come from, not only over the last few years with what was going on, but coming back through this pre-season, working hard, getting through those first JLT games, and then to put everything together last night was just fantastic. And it was just really, really good feeling.
Mate, just take us back, mate, even to the start of pre-season. Obviously, it's such a unique experience that you've just gone through this past pre-season. So you've got a group of players that are coming back to the football club. So can maybe give us a little bit of an insight into some of the early meetings with John. You know, was there much talk about last year from purely a performance point of view, as in the statistics of last year's team? How did it sort of build over the November-December period and then manifest itself in the JLT series?
Yeah, so we came back a couple of weeks earlier than what we were required to. So we came back with the younger guys just to sort of reintegrate back into that footy lifestyle of being at the footy club. And I guess the initial conversation with Woosher and the staff was just about bringing us back into the intensity of being in an AFL environment. So the workloads and training were slightly modified with us just because we didn't ultimately know how we were going to go back in into the environment. It's a bit different, I suppose, coming off someone with a long-term injury and missing a year of footy that way. We haven't missed it. So it was more probably the contact and the contested stuff, which we weren't able to get. And then, I guess, getting into Christmas was that's the first real point of, like, all right, let's just get through to there, see how we are, and then once you sort of come back from then, games start playing, and it's just a matter of consolidating, I guess, what the guys worked on last year with the game plan that we should put in place. And not of a lot, I guess, has really changed. It's just adding on top of that, moving in, and I think throughout the JLT, we're able to build each week, and it was great last night, I guess, how we finished against Collingwood and Geelong in those games and then moving into last night to not sort of fade out and put the foot on the throat when the opportunity was there was great. So it was sort of just all building. It just took time and last night was just, I guess, the reward for the hard work.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, I mean, for you guys, you had a new coach also. So it wasn't just integrating with some new teammates, but you've got a new coach and he'd implemented his game plan last year. I was able to speak to John during the week and I felt your JLT form was actually pretty good. You didn't win a game for that period and he felt the same thing. So and I think you touched on it, Trav, that the good part about last night, I think from a Bombers fan's point of view, because you had shown some really good form in the JLT, you were just able to do it longer and you were able to sustain that throughout the whole game.
Yeah, exactly. I think through the JLT, we got probably what we needed to get out of that. And then moving into the round one to be able to put what we've worked on throughout the JLT and throughout the pre-season into practice. I think there was a period in the sort of the second quarter where they started to get on top and we're actually able to sort of stem the flow. And when Hawthorn gets a run on, they're a very dangerous side. So that was a real positive. And then towards the end, to be able to really kick away and not let them get back in was also fantastic.
Trav, congratulations on for your role on Jager O'Meara too. I thought you played very well. But tell us about the confidence now in the speed and the electricity that you guys play with now. Because last night it always looked like you're trying to funnel the ball back into the middle of the ground. It's a very aggressive game style when you've got the footy.
Yeah, exactly. And it's sort of guys like myself and Orazio Fantasia, Josh Green, McDonald Tip and Woody up forward. They give a lot of confidence to the guys to get the ball forward. And then you've got the big keys of Hooksy and Joey Danaher down there. It's just allows us to sort of be a bit more free-flowing, and it's something that Woosh has really sort of got into us early, was just to get the ball moving forward and test our position out, see what they're going to do and see how they're going to defend it.
Well, it was a great win, a terrific win. It was hard not to be captivated by the scenes after the game, Trav. Terrific performance individually and as a group. Congratulations. Good to see footy back. Good to see the Bombers doing what they do really well. You've got the Brisbane Lions next week. We wish you well.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
There you go, Trav Collier, 25-point win to the Bombers against the Hawks. Quickly, around the grounds, Jay-Z.
It's West Coast up by 13 points as Jared Waite kicks a goal, so cut the lead to 7 points now, West Coast. 4 minutes left in the second quarter.
Near map aerial imagery, Roozy, Duck, Louis, Swatter, Jay-Z, Chewman, Rhett Biglands, but it's not always about the boys, Louis, because the girls have played their season and we now have the inaugural women's premiership team.
Yeah, they certainly do. The Adelaide Crows girls got the job done up at Metricon Stadium. 35-29, epic finish, close finish. We may be without a text here today at Adelaide Oval for the big clash, but there's one right in the room right now. The one, the only, Sarah Perkins. Congratulations, Sarah. Welcome to Triple M Footy. You're a premiership player.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
How's that medal feel around that neck? It looked like chaotic scenes. I pictured you running around there with Aaron's kids. I thought you were going to take off with them at one time.
No, unfortunately, I wasn't allowed to take off. Aaron got her back and wouldn't hand her over at the end. But no, I was happy I got a little cuddle with her. But yeah, it's quite heavy around the neck, so it's got a bit of use getting used to.
And everybody was fantastic. Well done to everybody involved. But the skipper, Erin Phillips, just outstanding on the biggest stage.
Yeah, she's just one of a kind, I think, and just one of those athletic people. So, yeah, obviously taking a long time to pick up footy, but, yeah, she got the job done for us yesterday, and I'm super proud of her.
How have you found the whole year? I guess I know it's only 8 games, but how have you found the whole experience? It's just been it's been sensational.
Yeah, it's been unbelievable. It's something you really can't explain. Obviously, we've only had a short pre-season and then straight into our 8-game season, and yeah, we've just taken it as well as we could have, and we just played our hearts out each week. And to get to yesterday was something that no one really gave us a chance of doing, but we had the self-belief and the great coaching staff and the boys down at the club backing us the whole way.
So take us through the week. How did the week in terms of meetings and training and then getting up to the Gold Coast? So just give us a bit of an insight into how the week looked for you, the girls.
So we obviously flew back straight after our game last Sunday, and then we were recovery Monday at the club, light session on the Tuesday. We then had our main session and our open session on the Wednesday night. We obviously did our game review on the Tuesday night, which is a bit different to every other club, obviously with 9 girls up in the NT. So we do it by Skype. We share the screen and we go through the game footage there as a group. And yeah, we flew out Thursday morning and spent a couple of days up on the Gold Coast just spending some time together.
What did you learn? Sorry, what did you learn from playing them last time? Because obviously the second time around, and you only play one, the rest of the season you only play each team once. So this is the first time you've ever played a team for the second time. So did that give you a bit of an insight into preparation and how you should play them the second time?
Yeah, definitely. I think it gave us a better look at sort of how we had to move the ball going into our forward line and where we had to lock down and how we could improve from, I'd say, our third quarter that we sort of lacked a couple of weeks here and there. So, yeah, we just looked at that.
On to the important stuff. How did you celebrate?
Yes, Tex.
And if you need an event planner, this bloke's probably the best person to do that.
Yeah, we might need one. We're looking at something like that. But no, we just went back to the hotel and we had dinner together and then our families came back and, yeah, just celebrated with a couple of drinks, but nothing too crazy.
Exactly what I would have done. Yeah.
Tex, it took these boys right here the best part of their careers to get to your cult status. You got it in 8 weeks. How does that feel to be getting around and known as the big Texan?
I'm the second Texan in Adelaide. I really, yeah, I enjoy sharing the nickname. I still haven't sort of come to terms with it. But, yeah, the only way I can say is that I've just taken it in my strides and I appreciate the support from everyone that they've given me. And, yeah, I never thought I'd be here, so
well,
I appreciate it.
Congratulations, Sarah, yeah, to you, stuff. To your That's team, it. To your club. And can I say, the father of twin daughters who are about to turn 14, you're inspiring a lot of young girls to think about doing what you girls are doing. So your forebears, you're doing a great job and you're wonderful ambassadors for the game of AFL, especially with the girls. So congratulations.
Thank you, boys. Well done.
Duck telling us that he just gets comfortable sitting at the front row of a play, and while the rest of us are up with cattle class, where were you sitting, Roozy? About 7D? That's got to change.
6A, 6B.
That's got to change every time I look down the aisle. I could see the Ducks, Bonts, just chatting to Rowan Taylor, just incidentally. A late omission for the Adelaide Crows, who take on the Giants.
Taylor Walker, the captain of Adelaide, and the key full forward, Schwatter. He is out. It is a big injury. Riley Knight comes in for the Crows. And at halftime in the game at Etihad Stadium, it's West Coast by 6 points over North Melbourne, 56-62. Sammy Mitchell, Schwatter,
yep,
absolutely tearing him apart after watching the Hawks go down to the Bombers last night.
Well, let's go downstairs. The other member of our call team this afternoon, the former Adelaide Crow himself, Rhett Biglands, and he's got the new GWS Giants runner with him. Biggles, welcome to you.
Thanks, Schwatter. Yeah, the leadership coach and the runner, Nick Maxwell. Thanks for joining us. Balmy conditions down here, but 11 omissions from your team after last season. How are they managing the expectations with all those changes of being premiership favourites, or one of them?
I think the good thing is that the boys actually came back from pre-season and they were still filthy with how we performed in that preliminary final. So I know a lot of people have said it was one of the best games of footy they've seen, but upon the review, when we actually went through it all, we went, you know what, we were terrible and we didn't play to the standard we expect. So the good thing is the players are really hurting. They came back hungry and they've sort of driven that themselves.
How long can you sort of go back to that prelim final loss and use it as inspiration? As a player, you know about it, but how long will you continue to use it as motivation?
I think just through pre-season. Once you start playing games, you're looking forward at the opposition you've got every week. So through the pre-season, we certainly addressed that. We looked at a lot of things and there was a lot of hard conversations had between particularly the senior players and each other. And obviously with that leadership group and the role that I have there, we made sure that we really analysed our performance, because that was the first year that I've been up there and been able to see how they've performed over that first year. But also I want to see the growth now. I want to really push it to that next level.
Max, it's Jay Clark here. A lot of the press in Melbourne at the moment is just about how good this young GWS side is and whether, you know, they've had the most talented young side we've ever seen, almost in the game's history. Huge amount of hype about the young talent on the list. Do you see it the same way? Do you think that the GWS team is light years ahead talent-wise than everyone else in the competition?
Oh, look, probably, Jay, in terms of talent, yeah, they probably are right up there. But the fact is, talent doesn't win your games of footy and it doesn't win your premierships. Obviously, it helps. But the way I describe it to people is, from my experience coming up here, you basically get a lot of first-round draft picks, which is obvious. But those guys have been the best player in their team all the way through. So the coaches who had him in under-10s and under-12s and under-14s, under-16s, they haven't really been coached that much because they've been the best player. So they've just allowed them to go about it. They've got up here and they realise only 22 get to play every week. So there's going to be 22 disappointed players who actually have to go back and play in the NEAFL. So we have to really drill into them that there's different standards at AFL level. You can't just expect to come in, waltz out, get your 30 touches and play football. It's a different game. So you need to be able to do the defensive acts and all the things that go with it. So we know that we have got talent, but obviously from my perspective and leadership, but also the coaches here, we've had to keep bringing them down, keep making them understand that that's not going to help us win games at footy. And I think the good thing is the players who have been around for 5-6 years, who have been through the 100-point floggings for the first 3 or 4 years, they understand that it has been a challenge and it has been hard, and they don't want to go back to losing games of footy. They want to keep building on what they developed last year.
Interesting your comments, Nick, about the prelim last year, because you're right. From the naked eye, when fans are watching the game, they're just seeing it as a really exciting game, and you know, the Giants played well and the Bulldogs played well. But when you do break it down, and I sense there's a real disappointment in how you actually played the game. Just if you could give us a little insight into perhaps relating that game to today. What is something in that game you felt you did poorly, you really need to address today and for the rest of the season in order to make a grand final and win a premiership?
Yeah, Roozy, it was a bit disappointing, but a lot of it was actually we were filthy, especially a lot of the senior players, because upon looking through that review, we lose by a goal, and there was so many little things that we could have done that would have made a different result. So taking nothing away from the Bulldogs, but we can only talk about what's in our control, not how they play. So the big thing for mine was actually our compliance around stoppages and those type of things. I think when we looked at our compliance, a lot of players weren't where they needed to be structurally. And some of that was our senior players and some of that was our leaders. So the real challenge for me has been making sure that those leaders understand they're out there to do the job. We can't expect to come in at quarter time, half time, three quarter time and explain to them what we need. They need to do it out there and they need to make sure they're driving those standards and those expectations.
What sort of runner are you going to be, Maxie? Uh-huh. A sort of a word-for-word runner, or are you going to ad-lib a little bit?
I'll tell you what, Duck, it just depends on who it is. There was the umpires, when we were flying back from Canberra last 2 weeks ago, actually said to me, geez, you gave someone a bake out there. And I said, yeah, occasionally you might have to. But the hardest thing I've been is actually trying to catch the player. When you go out there and they start chasing the footy, and I'm going, geez, I can't take off after here because... Our runner last year, we did about 16 to 18 Ks every week, so I've had to do a bit of training over the last couple of months.
What is the respect like for a runner these days? Geez, back in the day, though, you didn't get too much respect.
Yeah, we were chatting about this at the airport, you and I, and Duck said whenever he saw the umpire coming, he got his back up and he was ready. So I saw the runner coming over, so he had his back up ready to spray him back. But now the boys are pretty good because they understand that if I'm going out, it's about education. It's not about me going to actually take him off the ground, because I think going back a while, Duck, when you were playing, they would never have the kahunas to go and drag you and say you're coming off, Duck. So, yeah, it's obviously a little bit different in the game. But one thing I am expecting, I'm expecting the Adelaide crowd to give me an absolute mouthful because they gave it to me when I played for Collingwood. So I'm expecting it when I'm in pink as well.
Maxie, what was just your quick take on the Jordan DeGoey thing? Did you believe it when you first heard that Jordan DeGoey had broken his hand throwing a toy inside his home? Or did you think that this stinks straight away when you heard it?
Oh, I think you're never sort of quite sure what's going on, but you expect obviously that the club would go through it and know what's happening. So, yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm not really worried about what the Pies have been doing, Jay-Z. We've been worried about what we're doing in the Orange Boys here. So preparing how we need to for the Crows.
Well, it's a big game of footy against a parochial home ground crowd. So we wish you well, Nick, and all the very best today and for the year.
Thanks, boys.
There we go. Nick Maxwell, the leadership coach and also the runner. And I just think that they're going to have a close eye on him, Duck, because it seems to me, Roosie, that that is an on-ground coaching sort of role with the messages from the coach. You can say it now. You're not coaching.
Well, I think probably the thing that surprised me, when you had the two runners, you were able to give one message to the one that was sitting on the bench. He would run straight out, deliver the message while the other one was coming back. And then the AFL come up with this view, oh, the runner's spending too much time on the ground. The problem with one runner is the one runner has three or four collective messages and spends more time on the ground. So it's completely contradictory to the way the AFL wanted it done. Because it's very hard. If you're sitting down there, it compiles up. So as Nick said, you've got to chase one guy. He might be in the 50. Then you've got to get out to the wing, and then you've got to get... So that runner... on the old system, would run out and back, out and back, out and back. So
spends more time out there now.
So now they spend more time out. They're ridiculous.
Yep.
But I certainly think the old system was better. And back to your point about coaching, you could still coach, but now you have to coach because you're out there for longer.
Mm.
The other one was, what's the coach's message? Run out, give the message, run back.
Yep.
So I must admit, I'm very supportive of a two-runner system, which is never going to come back. It is very handy when you have a player that's played the game that's running. There's no question about
that.
There's
a little sidebar for our mate behind us now. He's just gone, Roosie wants the two-runner system back in. Little sidebar, tomorrow's paper off the back of the big one where you sit Zach Merritt, the number one draft.
Giving him three headlines already.
Well, we've got the best special comments man in the business.
You've got some injury concerns out of the Bulldogs with Dale Morris.
Yeah, we're just filtering out of the kennel now, Dale. Dale Morris. Totally stuffed that up.
Louis just tripped down the stairs and broke his ankle.
Dale Morris, fellas, I should say, we believe has broken his leg and could be out for as much as 2 months. So he's an absolutely crucial part of their back line.
Runner-up in their BNF last year.
And would be a huge blow. So we're chasing it now. 2 months would be bad news.
Yeah, look, he's
he's a big loss.
He is a big loss. He's organiser down there, really courageous player, can lock down one-on-one, but also can come and help his teammates. So that's a big loss.
It was right at the end of the game too, wasn't it?
Incident? And sort of twisted and fell awkwardly, I think. So whether it's Marcus Adams who sort of takes his spot. I mean, after losing Hambling, wasn't it? Maybe that's an area where there might be a little bit tested, Roosie.
Well, look, what they do have is a good defensive system. So they very rarely expose their defenders one-on-one. I guess if you're an opposition coach planning for them, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to expose their defenders. And they did get exposed a few times last year, but their defence is so good. And Morris is an integral part. Easton Wood comes across to help out. Morris is the other one that comes across to help out. And then you've got the runners on the deck. But they very rarely get exposed. It can if you isolate them one-on-one, but it's very hard to do it.
Duck, did you like what you saw the other night with the Doggies? They've had the limited preparation, obviously starting later against Collingwood.
Yeah, I thought they were pretty good. They had their moments. Obviously, I liked the fact that Johannesson went forward. Bob Murphy started back, came up onto the wing, and then he went forward. So clearly, he's starting to throw the team around a little bit more, and they're going to have a little bit more flexibility. And he's not going to just start at a half back every week, nor is Bob Murphy, which is what you have to be in the modern day game. You have to be able to play on every line.
Duck, is it a concern that they were sort of belted out of the stoppages? I mean, and particularly the first half, Collingwood really owned them through the midfield. Without sort of Jordan Ruffhead, we know value of a ruckman's really reinforced at the minute.
Well, it's once. I guess if that was a pattern, it'd be a concern. They obviously still won the game, but you're right. Collingwood were take nothing away from their opposition. They were superb. And let's not forget, Collingwood's on-ball brigade are pretty good.
Yeah, I think that's a bit of a story out of the weekend, Louis, is just that the no third up. I think everyone sort of thought, some said it's a good thing, some said it's a bad thing. I mean, what we're seeing is a real dominant ruckman. And I think now you've got full-time coaches. You're right. If it's a pattern, I doubt if it's going to be a pattern with Luke Beveridge. He's a premiership coach. But how they'll adjust it, I think that's going to be the fascinating thing over the next 3 or 4 weeks, because it won't take long to coaches. You know, if you're playing against the Melbourne, Max Gawn, Ryder, you know, obviously with Ruffhead out at the moment for the Bulldogs, they're going to have to come up with something a little bit creative, and Luke's as good a coach as anyone going around at the moment. But it is a story out of round one, the dominance of the ruck contest.
Yeah, absolutely. We touched on Essendon and what a great result it was for that footy club. We had Sheeds, TD, Fish and everybody walking down to the G. They had the siren. Sheeds almost couldn't get it going. Mm-hmm. Hawthorn, everybody's quick to circle at the start of the year. We're looking for angles. In fact, hold that thought right there, boys. We've got a very special guest on the boundary with Rhett Biglands, who's taking care of things down there, and some big breaking news out of team selection for the Adelaide Crows. Biggles?
Yes, joined by the two-time premiership player and coach of the Adelaide Crows, Don Pike. Thanks for your time, Pikey. The Texan out, late omission. What's happening with the hammy?
Yeah, look, it was a real tight call with Tex. He trained really well during the week, and we were pretty confident. He had a slight awareness, and you know, generally with hamstrings, the rule of thumb is if there's a little bit of doubt, it's better to give another week. And so we probably took the conservative view and pulled him out there today. So here we're going with Riley Knight coming in, who brings some run, which is going to be good on a day.
Thrown in the works during pre-season, obviously Cameron Ellis-Yeoman with his knee. How does it compare? You're second at the helm compared to last year, this pre-season compared to last year.
Oh, it's probably a little bit different in that last year it was a bit of a get-to-know-me type of experience, not only with the players but with the coaches and rolling out a slightly different game plan and training that. This year's been more about building on some of the foundation of the work we did last year. So slightly different, but still the same level of excitement. And, you know, round one's always a great time of the year. And, you know, the guys who have done a long and hard pre-season are ready to play and play for real. So looking forward to today.
It's interesting, Don, just when you're a coach coming into round one, particularly if you're playing on the last day, what have you picked up that you may be transferring to the players today, if anything? I mean, sometimes something comes out of that Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday game. Is there anything you've noticed today that you've either been working on or thinking maybe we need to deal with that? The Giants might bring something different out of the first 3 or 4 games you've seen.
Yeah, it's always interesting the first round, because you sort of do get a feel for what sides have been working on. I think probably the one thing which has stood out has been, you know, sides are trying to move the ball quite quick at the moment, and you know, that's something which we probably anticipated and expected and have been training for a while, and I expect GWS will be no different in that space. So there's a little bit in that area which you know, we speak to the players about, but clearly what they've recognised over the weekend is also just the step up in intensity which happens from JLT games to round one.
Yeah, and your ball movement's been fantastic, Pikey, too, particularly last year. What I guess from last year, what do you think as coach now that you had to work on to get from, you've had a couple of fifth finishes, just pipped by the Swans last year. What's the thing that you feel like you need to work on and get better at to jump up in that top four?
Yeah, we've probably focused on our consistency around our contest work, and that's not purely just you know, around the stoppage and the clearance. It's across the board, our ability to win our share, and whether it be an aerial contest or ground contest around the ground. So we've sort of done some work in that space, both from a technique viewpoint and also from just a mentality. And you know, we get a chance to obviously test that today against a quality opposition.
Troy Menzel, Pikey and Curtly Hampton have come in for their first games with Footy Club. 12 months here now. Hampton, for those who don't know, came to you and said, look, maybe I'm not a defender. Can I get a crack at the midfield? You must be pleased with what he's been able to present and back up.
Yeah, look, it's been fantastic. I mean, I don't know whether Curtly necessarily came to me or I went to him, but either way, I said I think we've got an opportunity for you to play in the midfield, and he saw himself as a more natural midfielder than a back that he'd played at GWS. So to his credit, though, he went away, and I explained to him that to play midfield, he's going to have to improve in his conditioning and his base. We knew he was a really strong power athlete, and he's got some real energy around the contest, but we need to make sure he had the capacity to use that across the way we wanted to play for four quarters. So he did a lot of work in that area, really improved his 2K time trial, got himself to be running some good times, which are midfield comparable, and you know, he has missed a beat so far and really earned his opportunity today, which is great for him.
Now, Pikey, onto the important stuff. A little birdie tells me that you got a hole in one recently, and your wife was the only person to witness it, and it was on the 19th, not even on a proper hole.
Yeah, there's a few different stories going around on that. It's like he's got a bit of mayo on that. No, it was on a hole that had been. They got a hole at Kionga where I play, which they put into play. It's not actually a temporary green; it's a genuine hole. But it was technically the 19th. You're right, but it was also the wife was there, but there's also the captain of the Kionga Golf Club was there as well. So I've got a couple of people who saw it, but whether it counts or not is probably still, you know, debatable.
Good stuff, mate.
Hey, Pikey, Mitch McGovern did really well in Texas' absence late last year. Kicked 4-1, I think, against the Bombers. He must be excited probably about the challenge to be spearheading up that forward line with JJ now.
Yeah, he is. And look, he was really in really good form last JLT game against Brisbane. So, yeah, he's another one of our younger players. We're really looking to make that next step. And I think he's got the capability of it. And as I say, with Texas' absence today, he might be more of a focal point, given probably more balls will be directed his way. So exciting player. Looking forward to a big day from him today.
Hey, Pikey, Roosie's been talking a lot this morning about, without the third man up, how you can get a real advantage in the ruck. Have you noticed that over the first part of this first round?
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think that was always the intention, was to allow the ruckman to really go to work with their craft, and you know, I think we're seeing already now the benefit of having a ruckman who not only is quality in that area but can direct the ball down to his midfielders. So like all things, I think what will happen is sides will look at it and probably on a week-by-week basis just adapt around whether they think they're going to win their share in the hitouts or they're going to even them, and that'll be a moving feast. But it clearly has changed the game in some way, because you just don't have the, you know, the Bulldogs the other night just weren't getting the benefit of Bontempelli's and Co's going up.
And I think that pivotal contest, which always is, I mean, the ruck contest is always pivotal, but Jacobs versus Mumford, I mean, it's a big battle today too, Pikey, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a great test, and different types of ruckman, but, you know, I know Sources are super keen for a big start of the year. So, you know, he gets the first look, as ruckman always do at the contest, and, you know, it should be a great test and a great battle between both those quality ruckmen today.
Pikey, exciting times, and well done and congratulations to all the girls. We had big Sarah Perkins up earlier. It must be a great vibe around the footy club with the girls winning the premiership.
Fantastic and great for our footy club, and you know, the girls and the passion and energy they play with has been great to witness, and fantastic, and you know, couldn't be happier for Beck and the girls.
Appreciate your time, mate. Good luck today. Right now, boys, let's talk about the Hawks. We've already discussed the Bombers and what a great feeling it was and a fantastic return to football in reality for that football club. But Hawthorn, everyone quick to get around and just hover, Roosie, and try and pick the bones out of teams that have once been great. Alistair Clarkson, does he have anything to worry about after the opening round?
Oh, look, I don't think it's necessary about picking the bones. I think Alistair's astute enough to realise after last year that clearly, you know, when you're dropping down the ladder, whether you've won four premierships or none, as in you get beaten a couple of grand finals, maybe a la St Kilda, when you start going down, you realise you've got to change some things and do things differently. I think Hawthorn were always going to be, for me, the second team behind Essendon about not knowing what to expect, because you, Mitchell Lewis we talked about, and the reason I guess I spoke a lot about Mitchell and Lewis, and Hodge we didn't know was going to be out of round one, but he'll be back next week, is they're such good kickers. Now the Hawthorn game's been built around a half to three quarter pace offensive game style, which to be honest protects their defence a little bit, and also doesn't mean you have to run as hard all the time. So what I was fascinated, what were they going to deliver? What sort of game style? Their marks were down significantly, and they weren't able to control the ball. I think O'Meara's a star. Don't get me wrong, but he's coming off 2 years. He's going to be a different player. Tommy Mitchell's a very good player, but you're taking the two best kicks, and we talked about Lewis going to Melbourne and how he controlled their tempo really, really well. Jay, you talking about Mitchell's had 23 so far. Pritis to Mitchell, the second receiver. Mitchell gets you into space, gives you time and space. So those two, more than any players, and Hodge the third, who didn't play last night, were responsible for Hawthorn getting into their three-quarter kicking game. Clarke, I've got no concerns about their coach, but it is, what's their game style going to end up like? Because I think one of the things you tried to expose Hawthorn on, very, very difficult to do, was getting the ball outside and running up and back. You felt that if you could get them into a foot race, you're a chance to beat them, but they were so good at controlling the ball. What we saw, and you touched on it, Jay, that they got beaten in the foot race last night. So that's probably the only concern coming out of the game, is just establishing their game style and how much run do they have through the middle of the ground.
Yeah, they've lost an element of trust. And that's that trust in their kicking and their decision making and all that sort of stuff. So when there was always, when you watch them, you just knew in tight situations, important moments, you know what, it's in his hands. The decision, right decision's going to be made. Execution of the skill is going to be perfect. They've lost a little bit of that. Does that make them, is that going to make them slide down the ladder? I don't think so. I think they'll still play finals footy this year. And therefore, if they're in the eight, as Bulldog's shown, if they're in the eight, they're capable of winning it. But they have lost that element of trust for me, watching them now.
So, Rizzi, as a coach, you lose to Sam Mitchell, who sets up a lot of your stuff. Do you try and anoint somebody to replace Sam? So to be that guy, he would always wander down and just demand the footy, a little quick, cheeky handball, just so it got in his hands. And then he would hit that little in target or that risky kick low and hard on the 25-35.
Look, it is difficult because Mitchell he's the best decision maker and kicking the competition. Yeah. I mean, and that's where it becomes really difficult, because what is their game style going to be? Everyone else on the weekend that's certainly won, and a few losing teams, move the ball really quickly, which is demanding, up and down, up and down. I think what we saw with Melbourne, they sort of revert a little bit to that Hawthorn game style, that three-quarter kicking game, and it worked particularly well. So there's going to be periods of game that Hawthorn will do what Hawthorn did last year. I just think it's going to be hard. I'm a bit like Duck. It is going to be harder to get into it. You remember a couple of their close games last year. I think the SCG stands out for me. I think it was Mitchell flicked one over his head. Lewis picked it up, hit Cyril Rioli. Rioli goes back and kicks a goal. So, look, there's no question you drop off when two of your best all-time great players go to another football club. What will O'Meara bring? He can run and carry. He will bring some. Tommy Mitchell's a bit more hands around a stoppage. Mm. And I thought his game was really good last night, Tommy. They'll develop other aspects of their game. Billy Hartung's a good runner. Isaac Smith's a good runner. They've been around for a while. I mean, Ellis will develop other aspects. I'm not worried about Hawthorn overall. I think if we're comparing them to their absolute best, when you're taking two of their best players out, you're not going to be as good a team. There's no question about that.
I suspect Hodgie will more than likely try to play that Mitchell role more often than what he has done. He's been that sort of player that's played all over the ground. I suspect he'll play more of that role, I think.
And Burgoyne's the other one that can get him into a kicking game. So you might even see at times, whereas last year Burgoyne was half back, Hodgie was half back, and then all of a sudden you needed a clearance and you hadn't seen Burgoyne in there for 90 minutes. Yep. Burgoyne went in and had three clearances, bang, bang, bang. So you might actually see Burgoyne come back into the midfield to get them into that game. Or you might say, Alistair might very well be saying, look, that kicking game's dead. You know, we can't play that slowish style of football, that keepings off style of football. We've got to generate another game style.
We saw Michael Malthouse today in the Sunday Herald Sun write a very strong column saying that he thought it was the right thing for Hawthorn to do, to trade Mitchell and Lewis, getting not much back but clearing the salary cap space, importantly, for O'Meara and Mitchell. What is your guys' take on these two big trades? Did it catch you by surprise? Is he compromising the integrity of the fabric of the footy club?
Brave decision, and you won't be able to judge it for 3 or 4 years. Really, you can't judge it off this year. It's brave, and I think more clubs will do it. And what's funny is we speak about that all the time, us in the media, about doing that, and then when someone does it, we go, oh wow, why'd they do it? Well, he's done it, and he's looking at the future. He's looking 3, 4, 5, 6 years ahead, not this year.
I agree. I don't think you can be critical of it, Duck, because unless you're inside a football club, you don't really know. There's a lot of commentary around what the discussions were. So I'm not critical. And I also think we tend to follow American trends. You've got free agency over there forever. What happens now? The NBA is a classic example. Players will get traded pre-free agency. That's a slight example of that, Jay, I reckon. Yep. Even though they weren't free agents, we will start to see players get traded a year before they're out of contract. The demand will be, Duck, re-sign now, or we're going to have to trade you, mate. So
well, I think probably the year before.
There was a guy the other day for the Sacramento Kings, last name Cousins, halfway through a press conference, the All-Star game. He's doing the press conference. His manager whispers in his ear that he's been traded to the Pelicans in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Halfway through his press conference. Do you think it'll ever get to that, like that sort of scenario where we're, you know, trading in the middle of the year?
Well, we'll catch up at some point. I think the thing, Jay, is more around, yeah, where Clarko thought they were, what Amira, what Mitchell, how many young players. I think the part of the article that Mick said, which I didn't agree with, that he's not going to help, that Lewis is not going to help Melbourne, and Mitchell's not going to help the Eagles.
Well, he almost said that would hurt them.
Yeah, and I completely disagree with that. I think, Lewis getting to Melbourne is a fantastic pickup because it's not going to stop Angus Brayshaw from getting development, Christian Petrarca. They're going to play games of football, and there's nothing wrong with young players. The young midfielders playing forward pocket, Louis, playing half forward, developing other game parts of the game anyway, and look, it's only early days. We've seen Mitchell dominate the JLT, probably almost best on ground as Lewis was. So, I think, what you like to see, and it doesn't always happen, Duck, is win-wins in these situations. I think Tommy's going to be a good player for Jaeger. O'Meara is going to be a good player, and there's no point in second guessing. I think it's great discussing it more from how the fans would think. Clearly, there's some angst when two of you. Yeah, best clubman to leave a football club. That's always going to happen. But I think Melbourne, West Coast and potentially Hawthorn could benefit from what happened.
How big Bradley Hill, though, Ruzzi?
Yeah.
We took that speed. You want to talk about speed?
Yeah. That
Isaac Smith and he have just roamed that MCG up and down, and carved you on a runaround, wraparound.
Yeah.
And with Isaac having to play a little bit more probably on the inside or in the middle, just seems to be a glaring deficiency. Even though Hill could get cold at times, I reckon he's a big loss as well when it comes to their setup and their structure.
Yeah, I totally agree.
I think so, particularly where, as I said, I mean, where the speed aspect came from speed and run came from was Hill and Smith, and they were two really difficult players to match up on. He's probably another loss we haven't even talked about. You know, the kicking game and the running game. Kicking game, Lewis and Mitchell, which we spoke about. The running game, and I think that's why Isaac Smith stood out so much last night, because he looked like the almost not the only one. That's a bit hard, but he was the one that
with the
run and speed and wheels. Bruce can do it when he gets in the midfield. He's probably not as long a runner as what Smith, and I think Hill's going to really benefit Fremantle Dockers because that's something that they certainly needed as well.
Well, they get the Adelaide Crows at the MCG, and next Saturday they do the Hawks. But right now we need to stop down. We've got a big segment right here. Jay-Z comes across with a big reputation.
Oh, boy.
And I'll tell you what, Mr. Music, please hit the opener for Jay-Z's Big Three.
This is Jay-Z's Big Three.
Have you voiced that?
No, I haven't. That's nice, though. Hey, boys, quickly, let's go straight to Dusty Martin's contract, because I can tell you the numbers that are on the bit of paper that's in his letterbox right now. He stands to earn $4.25 million from Richmond on his next deal. That's 5 years at $850,000 a year. Now, clearly, he's waiting out for that offer to go up. His management, Ralph Carr, is determined to sort of leave it until the end of the season, because big offers are expected to come from two clubs, North Melbourne and St Kilda being no. So, Duck, what do you think the Tigers should do? Should they be forced after a sensational game on Thursday night from Dusty Martin? He could be a Brownlow medalist by the end of the year. Should they hold their nerve, leave it at $850 for the whole year, or should they increase the contract now?
Well, if they want one of the gun match winners of the competition, they've got to pay for it. Simple.
And he's worth more than that, $850?
Well, he's worth what the market says he's worth, and if someone else offers him $1 million, then that's what he's worth.
I think the problem, too, at the moment, Jay, is the collective bargaining agreement, isn't it? I mean, potentially,
apparently it's going up. Well, they're saying it'll go up 20%.
Yeah, and look, most of the managers have that built in anyway, so it might not be a factor in contract talks, but I mean, that 850, if it goes up 20% and it's not factored in, it's a fair whack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Geelong coach Chris Scott has been under the microscope this week with a bit of tension emerging between himself and Jimmy Bartel and how that contract situation was handled. Bartel wanted to play on, and the Cats, much like Mitchell and Lewis, weren't really keen for him to go on next year. And there's been some clips, some to-ing and fro-ing between the two. But can I draw your attention to something Mitch Duncan told me not so long ago about Chris Scott's coaching this year? He said he's been more bubbly, lots more fun to be around. He's injected more fun into the team environment. So the question at the moment, we know he's a good coach, 72% winning record at his time at the Cattery, but how is his relationships with the players? And with Luke Berridge's success at the Bulldogs, Roosie, that's clearly under the microscope. So he's about to sign a two-year contract extension, Chris Scott. Geelong are adamant that if he was on the market, potentially with vacancies at Collingwood, Richmond, Port Adelaide, Gold Coast at the end of the year, that he would be snapped up just like that. So the Cats are re-contracting him. If it doesn't happen this week, it will be in the next week. And lastly, now we love the guys at Champion Data, don't we? They're right up with all their numbers.
Kingy,
Chew does a great job.
Kingy,
best mates.
Outstanding. But I think there's a glitch in the matrix, fellas, because at the start of the season, they did their midfield rankings. It's a qualitative assessment, Duck, and it had Collingwood at the top, and it had Melbourne ranked the worst midfield in the competition. Now, Clayton Oliver yesterday, absolutely outstanding, 36 possessions. Jack Viney, we know what Max Gawn does, etc. Roosie, did you spit out your cornflakes when you read that, that Melbourne has the worst midfield in the competition, according to the best number crunchers in the AFL?
Well, I did have some discussion with someone regarding the rankings, I must admit, because, look, I was told it was based on the averages, not necessarily. I think Collingwood's best midfielders are at the top end, but they don't have the depth of a lot of other teams.
That's a crock, isn't it, Roosie?
So that's why it was a little bit skewed, because my question was, if you've got the number one midfield in the competition, how can you finish outside the top eight? Because the midfield generally can control the game, protects your defence, and it also gives the forwards a bit better service. So I was explained a little bit more about that.
I had a great job. Triple M Rocks Footy.